This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
Hi, my name's Helen, and I stopped drinking alcohol almost exactly 7 years ago. When I stopped drinking, I really felt a lot of benefits. My health was better, my finances were better, my attention was better, and I really felt like I started to kind of grow up as a person. At times, it was still difficult. At times, even now, I feel like sometimes it's hard to explain to people why I don't drink. And sometimes still, I feel like I'm a bit alone on this journey. But a couple of years ago, I found Over the Influence, and that really changed things a lot for me. And I just felt like I wasn't alone in this journey anymore. It's just so nice to have this massive connection with all these like-minded people. Come along to Over the Influence and be part of an amazing community.
So if you want to join us, go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Welcome to Over the Influence. It is absolutely fantastic to have you listening wherever you have downloaded this in the world. Maybe you are discovering OTI for the very first time because you'll be listening to this. It is still the month of January. If you are doing dry January, just keep going. You are doing absolutely amazing. And if you are listening for the first time, really good to have you here. My name is Sharon Hartley. Everyone calls me Shaz. I'm based in Lancashire in the northwest of England. I have been sober now for nearly 4.5 years, give or take a month or two. It started out as a 90-day break back in September 2018. That's all it was ever going to be because obviously life would be completely awful without alcohol in it. Turns out the complete opposite is true. It's been a game changer. It's been life changing and continues to be so. That's why this podcast exists. I don't sing about sobriety on my own. I do it with my lovely, sometimes tired, new dad co-host, Ben Anderson. How are you?
Tired and a new dad. I'm getting less tired now. I'm going to stop saying that because I realise that the start of every episode of Over the Influence at the moment, I go, oh God, I'm so tired because I'm a dad now. But no, I am a dad. I am dad to Leo. He is 15 weeks old now. Shaz, can you believe that? That's flown.
How?
Yeah, flown by. I'm fiancé to Jem and I've been sober for 2.5 years now. And I'm delighted. It's the best decision I ever made. Didn't necessarily mean to go alcohol-free. I tried it as an experiment for 3 months, but then very quickly saw the benefits of alcohol-free life. And that spurred me on to extend my break to 6 months. And then I extended it to 12. And then on day 366, I went, you know what? I'm a better person without booze. And I'm going to live the rest of my life alcohol-free. Because I felt that confident on day 366 that for me, being alcohol-free was the way for me to just achieve what I want to do in life, both work-wise and personally. Shaz, I have to say, speaking of achievements, you know we're in our record ever month for downloads.
Hit me with some stats, Ben. Come on.
We're getting thousands of downloads a day on Over the Influence at the moment from all over the world. And I think we've had a really good Dry January lineup. We started off Dry January with a community member, David in Scotland, who came on to talk about how he searched for Dry January this time last year in his podcast app. We popped up and he's now celebrating a year alcohol free. He decided to carry it on, was only going to do Dry January, but decided to carry it on. We then had Michael Brown come on from the States, TikTok superstar. But then we hit you with the science with William Porter in the second week of Dry January. Thomas Hartley, star of Married at First Sight UK, came on. And I loved that episode because he's just starting out on his alcohol-free journey. I think talking to someone who's so determined that they want to achieve this for the rest of their life in the early days is really interesting. And I am delighted that we're going to Canada for today's episode. We're going to Toronto. And the reason I'm so excited is because we sing about sobriety from the rooftops. You're from Lancashire, Shazza. Very UK love.
Hiya.
I'm originally from Birmingham, now live in Liverpool, but this is obviously a global movement of people deciding to go alcohol-free. And Canada's been hitting the news this week in terms of alcohol-free life. I can't wait to speak to our guest about why. Shaz, go on, you did the big intro.
Oh, I'm really, really excited about this one. Really, really pleased. I've got to say, when I saw that the name of your podcast and your Insta... Sorry about that. There was just a big loud crash in the room. Bear with me.
Okay. We tidied this up in the edit. Don't worry, Madeline.
Don't mind us. This was me messaging one of my boys saying, please, can you creep in quietly with the laptop charger?
Right. So, okay.
Crash, bang, wallop. So while this is a cock up, I'll just quickly plug it in. Bear with me. What a disaster. We're really, really looking forward to today's chat. It will become apparent why, because Ben's armed with reports and statistics about stuff that's going on at the moment in Canada about alcohol-free life. We've just had a big old discussion about it, actually, on our premium podcast, which we will tell you about later on. When I saw the name of your podcast and your lovely Insta, it just spoke to me. Happiest Sober. It's a beautiful name. It's Madeline Forrest, based in Canada. Madeline, welcome to the podcast. Sorry for the chaos. It's really, really lovely to have you here. How are you?
Hi, thanks so much for having me. It's good to be here. I'm good. How are you doing?
Well, better now. My laptop's plugged in and the stuff isn't falling to bits anymore. And when I sort of cool down, I'll be absolutely fine. We're really good. Thank you.
We're very honest here at Over the Influence, Madeline. That's one of the things about us. Yeah.
I love it.
A bit too honest at times. Just tell us a little bit about you, Madeline.
Yeah. So I've been sober since November 2020. I got sober during the pandemic when, like, I think a lot of people kind of experienced their drinking spiking a little bit when we went into lockdown. But yeah, so my background, I grew up with two alcoholic parents. My mom had been sober for my whole life. My dad had been sober when they got married, and then he relapsed when I was a kid, when I was like 8. So my parents separated from there. And so I grew up in a house where alcohol was a very big topic of conversation, because like my dad wasn't in my life a ton because he was kind of like in and out of rehab. And so my mom was really open with us about it. And so I wasn't allowed to drink for a long time, my sisters and I, and none of us broke that rule. We all followed it. Like, we had a very, very healthy kind of respect for like what alcohol can do. But when I did drink for the first time, I find it so interesting now to look back on, because I really was armed with like a lot of knowledge going into that. But when I did drink for the first time, it all kind of went out the window. And then I became like a pretty big partier for about 10 years until I eventually decided to quit. So that's my little Coles Notes background.
Madeline, do you mind if we go back to when you were that little 8-year-old, Madeline, and living in that situation? Do you mind if I ask you what you remember about that time?
Not a lot, actually, because that was what like when my dad relapsed from drinking, my parents separated. Like, it was an immediate line in the sand for my mom that like that was going to be it unless he got sober. So I kind of blocked some of it out. I think I never saw my dad drunk. Like, he came home drunk in the middle of the night when we were asleep and he was out, and I never saw him drunk. So it was more just that he wasn't around a lot. And so my mom just always, because my mom got sober at 21 and never drank again. She's been sober for like nearly 40 years. So she was just always like really, really open with us about it. And we all were very in the loop on kind of what was going on. But I remember it more so as I got a little bit older, as opposed to like kind of when it happened. I don't remember a lot about it.
How open was she? Because that's a difficult conversation to have with teenagers, isn't it? Like, trust me, guys, I've been there. You know, how much did you know about her relationship with alcohol before she decided to pack it in at 21?
She was really open. Like, she had grown up with, like, her dad was an alcoholic, and she watched him kind of struggle to get sober for his entire life, like up until he passed away. And so that's why she ended up getting sober so young, because she very, like, she had this really clear, like, I'm not going to be him. And if this is a problem for me, like, that's going to be it. I just have to make this decision. So she actually was really open, and we, like, my dad went to rehab a few times when I was kind of like in, I think, university age, in my like kind of early 20s. We went and visited him in rehab. Like, it was a pretty open conversation. And my mom felt like, the funny thing is that my mom is like, she was never strict. She didn't like rules, but like, that was the one thing that she was like, none of us would have ever crossed that line with her. We were never going to drink like in high school before we were allowed to.
You say that your mom was really young when she gave up alcohol.
Yeah.
How old are you, Madeline? I know you shouldn't ask a lady her age, but like,
no, I don't mind.
Are you in your 20s?
I'm 29. Really, I'm hanging on to my 20s by thread. I'm 29. So I got sober at 27.
Okay. And what was that like, just in terms of the kind of the reactions you got from social groups, friends? You know, it's socializing is a big part of your life in your 20s. I'm saying this, I'm only 34, but it feels like a long time ago that I was in my 20s.
Yeah, hang on a minute, I've got 20 years on Madeline.
Yeah, it was a hard thing to do. I think what makes it kind of harder too is that, like, I think from the outside my drinking looked pretty okay. Like, it was really what caused me to quit drinking was how alcohol made me feel internally. Like, it really caused me a lot of anxiety every time I drank. And I just, like, I knew I had an unhealthy relationship with it, but I wasn't at this point where, like, people in my life were being like, this isn't looking so good. So I think sometimes that makes it harder because people are less likely to kind of get it. Like, people think, like, I think you're fine, you know? So there's some of that. And there, it definitely was a bit challenging in some cases, but I think I was pretty lucky because I got sober during the pandemic. And in Toronto, we were really locked down. Like, our lockdown lasted for a while. So I, at the time, I felt like, oh my God, this is the worst. I'm struggling through like early sobriety and we're locked down and like, I'm so isolated. And I thought at the time that that made it harder. But looking back now, I think that was such a gift, the timing of it, because by the time I was even able to like go out to a bar, I was like 7 months sober. So I did, like, by the time I was able to start really like properly socializing, I had so much time under my belt and I was like so much more kind of comfortable in it. So I think that actually like kind of worked out really well for me.
It was such a difficult time though, wasn't it? The pandemic.
Oh my God. Yeah.
I mean,
so hard.
We've heard, you know, a lot of stories similar to yours, Madeline, where people have gone, you know what, I'm going to use this time now. I'm going to stop drinking. And then there was sort of no middle ground. And then it went the other way for so many other people. We're like, oh my God, I'm locked down. And the drinking's ramped up. So every credit to you for being able to do that in lockdown. Did you do it on your own as such, or did you do it with any support of maybe friends, family members, groups?
I mean, my mom was my main support. I called her like every day and like, don't think I would have been able to do it without her. But I did join. So Laura McCowan, the author of the book We Are the Luckiest,
I've got Laura McCowan quotes on my quotes board.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, I've got a quotes board. I'm not sure if you've heard the podcast before, but I love a stat and I love a quote, and I'm a loser that actually writes them down when I see something.
I'm the same. I love that.
Any scrap of paper, and I pinned it.
Yeah.
The Laura McCowan one I love up here. One stranger who understands your experience exactly will do for you what hundreds of close friends and family who don't understand cannot. I love that from Laura
perfect.
McCowan.
Love that.
That's so good. That's so good. Yeah, I have. I she has so many good ones. But yeah, I joined her support group, the Luckiest Club. So I did the kind of like virtual support for a few months. And then I really like leaned on my mom. I read a lot of books. I read a lot of Quit Lit. I feel like those are the three main things that kind of got me through it. But yeah, looking back, it was a hard time. Like, we'd gone into lockdown. I started drinking so much. I was like, nothing else to do. And then at the time I was living with a boyfriend at the time, and then we broke up. So then I was living alone in lockdown and then got sober. So it was a really like isolating time. Wow. For sure.
I remember on my social media feeds, Madeline, during lockdown when it first happened, and put the fear and the confusion to one side, people were going, OMG, chin chin, it's gin o'clock now, because people weren't driving to work. It was in the UK at the time, in the first lockdown. I remember it being beautifully sunny. There was this run of gorgeous weather for about 3 months, which is most unusual in the UK. We don't get that.
I remember that actually.
It was so nice. It was so lovely. And people were drinking in the back garden and drinking earlier and not having to take kids on the school run and things like that. And it was seen, I think, at first as a bit of a novelty. So what do? You celebrate with alcohol. But then the reality of that 12 months down the line is quite different.
Yeah, I was for sure. Like I was working from home full time, as most of us were when we went into lockdown. And like, I kind of struggled with that, with feeling like there was no separation between work and home. And I remember just being like, the only thing that separates my working hours from my non-working hours is to pour a drink right when I log off. Like that was a real justification for me at that time, for sure. And I was drinking most days out of the week in that time. And I guess it was about like 6 months in lockdown before I finally was like, oh, I have to do something about this.
And are you now alcohol free for good? Mm-hmm. Like, are you alcohol free forever?
Yeah. Definitely.
And what gives you the confidence to say that? Because forever's a long bloody time.
I know. I know obviously we all have to take it one day at a time. Like that's all you can ever do. But I do feel comfortable in being like, I'm never gonna drink again. I don't want to drink again. I think the main thing for me is just like feeling like I've come so far. And like, it's so, I can't argue with how much better my life is because of it. So I just can't imagine that I would ever go back to it. And I feel like even in, you know, the lowest of lows that I've had in the past couple of years, there have been lots of times where I've been like, I really wish I could drink right now because I miss being able to drink when I'm having like a hard time. But even in that, there was a knowing of like, it wasn't like, maybe I will. It was very much like, oh, I miss it. I wish I could right now, but like, I'm not going to, cause that's not something I do anymore. It's just like not an option I'm giving myself.
Yeah. We've got very similar approaches to it, I think. Cause yeah. I did exactly the same. It was that kind of objectivity. It was like, right. Okay. I could have that pint that bloke's drinking in that beer garden now, but actually just take a few minutes. Do I actually want to drink it? No, because objectively looking at it, I'm better now, you know, work, family, like friendships, everything is going better. So I'd be an idiot to go back to drinking. Yeah. It's interesting talking about time, because you said earlier as well that by the time that you went out and did, you know, back into kind of social situations, that you had 7 months under your belt. And you just said then as well that, you know, I've done so well, like I've come so far. Mm-hmm. Like when do you think it kind of, we like to say as first target, we always encourage, and we're thinking, you know, people are in dry January listening to this right now. We're not pressuring anybody, Madeline. We'd never do that. But we're just kind of like sneakily suggesting that you can carry this on past the end of January if you want to. When do you think that kind of confidence then, that I'm a non-drinker now? Mm. Can you put a time on it?
I think, well, it took me a few tries before it stuck for sure. Like I started off as well identifying as sober curious because I was really in this space of trying to like figure this whole thing out and what am I doing? And I know this is something I need to do, but it feels scary to commit to it. So I also did the kind of like sober curious thing for a while. And within that time, I would kind of do like 2 or 3 weeks off of it and then drink again, and then 2 or 3 weeks off of it and then drink again. So by the time it finally stuck, I remember, because my date is November 8th. And then I remember getting past a month for the first time and feeling this real sense of like, the other times that I let myself drink, I had this mindset of like, oh, I'm just 2 or 3 weeks that I can restart, like whatever, not whatever, but like kind of giving myself a pass. And I remember once I hit like past a month, I remember this real sense of like, oh, I don't want to wreck this. Like I want to keep the streak going. So I think that became a motivator. It was almost like the more days I got, the more motivated I was to be like, I don't want to wreck this. I want to keep this going. But I think the first time that I really kind of felt comfortable with forever, I want to say is maybe like the 6 month mark. Like I knew I was in it before then, but I feel like at the 6 month mark, there was a little bit more of a shift. But it is hard. It's kind of hard to say. It feels like such a blur.
Totally get that, Madeline. Now, Ben describes himself in many ways as an accidental sober.
I like that.
Am I an accidental sober? I definitely wanted to take the break from alcohol. You know, there was no doubt. And I wanted to prove to myself that I didn't have an issue with alcohol, that I could do this. Hence why in the beginning, it was only 90 days. So, and a lot of people that we speak to on the podcast, the guests, nobody sets out having that break, thinking, I am never going to drink again. When you think about those first 7 days and then your first social occasion, and then, hang on a minute, like you said, you've got the first month. And I look back now and I think, oh my God, I'm still doing this. Never intended ever to be alcohol free. But then sobriety becomes so much more about not drinking, doesn't it? If you give yourself that chance, and if you just give yourself time and keep going. Would you agree?
Yeah. And you know what? I really love that. And something I actually always try to kind of talk about during Dry January as well, is because I did a Dry January before I got sober, before I ever intended to get sober, at the beginning of 2020. And I had the worst time with it. Like, I struggled. I found it so hard. I stayed up until midnight, February 1st, and drank right at midnight, like counted down to it. And I came away from Dry January feeling like, ooh, that proves that, like, sober thing's not for me. Like, that was really hard. That just proves, like, I can't enjoy my life and I can't have fun. And I always like to share that when there's like a Dry July or a Dry January, because I feel like for anyone who's listening, who's maybe like, oh, well, I'm doing this and I'm finding it so hard and I'm actually not really feeling that many benefits, I always just like to say, like, that doesn't mean that sobriety is not for you. It probably actually means the opposite, because all of those feelings are like real indicators. Like, it's giving you a lot of valuable information on your relationship with alcohol. So, like, I did that Dry January early 2020 and was like, oh my God, like, yeah, I can't do the sober thing. That was so hard. I could never enjoy my life and not drink. And then it was about like maybe 9 months later that I got to a point where I was like, actually, I have to do this. So I think that's also something I like to point out, so that people don't like get discouraged if it feels completely different for them. Cause for me, it was very much like something that I got to a point where I was like, I have to do this, cause like alcohol is making me suffer.
Okay, so tell us then, what's happened since November 2020? You said that, you know, anxiety was a big reason for you to quit drinking. We hear that all the time, not just from podcast guests, but people in our community who are like really surprised. Like, we had a conversation this week with someone who, obviously I won't break the confidentiality, but they've been on antidepressants for quite a long time, and now they've removed alcohol. They're over 100 days into it, and they feel really confident that they're now not taking these antidepressants. It's been a couple of weeks and they're feeling really good. You know, you hear those stories all the time, don't you? Of course, the advice is always to talk to your doctor before you change your medication. So what's happened for you then since going sober 2 years ago? Yeah. Over 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
It is. Thank you. It's definitely the biggest one for me was the anxiety. Like, that was such an issue for me throughout my entire drinking career. Like, from the very first time I ever got drunk, I felt it. Like, so I would always wake up after drinking, I would feel like I would just spiral. I would just be like, oh my God, what did I do last night? What did I say? If there were things I didn't remember, I would be in a complete panic about it all day or longer. And like towards the end, like kind of in like summer 2020, there would be times, cause like you had your little COVID bubble where I was only seeing my sisters, and I would go like have drinks with my sisters. And I remember even sometimes having maybe only a couple glasses of wine and only being with them and still being so anxious the next day. And my sisters being like, you were with us, nothing happened, you're fine. And I like couldn't shake it. So the biggest thing for me is just like never taking for granted how freaking good it feels to wake up every morning and being like, I remember everything I did last night. I never have to question like what happened in my night. Like, so there's that, which just feels like so much freedom. But I think a real shift that's happened is like, I feel so proud of myself. Like, there was this real sense of like being able to feel proud of who I am as a person on like a whole different level. And that was one of the nicest kind of shifts, was like kind of a combination of like, I can feel proud of who I am because I'm not like getting drunk and doing things I regret all the time, which like, you know, obviously kind of shapes how you feel about yourself when you're constantly behaving in ways that don't really align with like how you want to live your life. But then also just being able to take pride in like knowing I did something that's really hard and knowing that like I made this change for myself, even though it's hard, even though it goes against like the norm in our world. And that's really just like shifted how I feel about myself, how I feel about my life. So it's changed everything for the better.
Everything you've just said there really sums up your name, Happiest Sober.
Yeah.
You are really, you're just glowing, you know, not only
can we see,
but just the way you speak about sobriety, but it can be so hard for people listening now. People who, you know, might, as I said in the introduction, might be listening to this podcast for the very first time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the same. I scorned sobriety. I thought if you didn't drink, life is just going to be absolutely diabolical.
Yeah, same.
It can be so hard to even look into the future. What would you say to somebody listening now that is in the early days, Madeline, in those first few weeks, that can't imagine being 3 months, 6 months, mm-hmm. you know, like you now over 2 years sober? What would you say?
I would say that that's exactly how I felt in the beginning. Like it, for me, alcohol was, I had to grieve it. Like there was such a grieving process for me that came with getting sober. Like I remember reading that. I think I was reading a Quit Lit book and I read someone say like, when you get sober, you have to grieve alcohol. And I felt so like it just clicked for me. I was like, that's exactly what I'm going through right now. Like I had to grieve, like it was something that I was doing almost every day towards the end. And it was something that I relied on to feel good, to relax, to have fun, to connect with people. And then all of a sudden that being gone in from my life and coming to terms with that was really challenging. So I would just say to someone who's in their early sobriety, or even if you're like doing dry January for the first time and you're like, oh my God, this is harder than I thought. I would just say that how those early days feel, that doesn't reflect how like longer term sobriety feels. So like if you're in your first month or in your early days and you're like, this is really hard, that doesn't mean sobriety is hard forever. It just means it's hard in the beginning. And like it does get easier as much as like, you know, everyone says that, it really, really does get easier. And you get to kind of watch yourself and your life like transform in really positive ways as it keeps going. So I would just say too, like use all the tools at your disposal. Like join a group if that helps you, read Quit Lit, follow sober Instagram accounts, listen to sober podcasts like this one, like really just like put everything into it. You just have to get through the day. That's all you have to do is get through the day. And eventually you'll notice like, oh, I'm not like focusing on not drinking today. Like there'll be that shift where you're like, it's not something you have to think about all the time anymore. Like it just becomes life. So just kind of like hang in there through the part where it's hard, because it's very worth it.
We are just going to take a really quick break from this fabulous episode with Madeline at Happiest Sober. And it will be brief, this one, because I am flying solo. Ben has left me to it. If you are one of the millions upon millions of people that were planning to take a month off boozing, this was before Christmas, according to Alcohol Change UK, which is the organisation behind the official Dry January campaign. Just a couple of stats for you. 1 in 7 adults, that's a lot, plan to go alcohol free for the whole of January, with 3 in 10 looking to cut down generally in 2023. Now, you may or may not know that the Dry January campaign was launched by Alcohol Change UK 10 years ago. This month, it is their anniversary, first launched in 2013. It was the idea of Emily Robinson. It was then called Alcohol Concern. The organisation is now known as Alcohol Change UK. If you want any further information at all about what they do, head to their website. There's tons of stuff on there. Loads of free resources, alcoholchange.org.uk. And as well, you can download the app. Chances are you might have done this already. It's free. And it's even though it's an app for the month of Dry January, the Try Dry app, it's something that you can keep on your phone and use all year round. Like I said, at superb organisation, alcoholchange.org.uk. Oh, and very quickly, before I forget, I must mention this, because if I don't, Ben will tell me off. Please, if you enjoy Over the Influence in your ears, week in, week out, every single week, you enjoy what you hear, you love the guests, maybe you have a bit of a laugh as well while you're listening to it, but most importantly, we hope it inspires you and motivates you and just makes you feel a little bit normal if you are in any way, shape or form reassessing or taking a look at your relationship with alcohol. Please do head to your podcast provider and give us a glowing review. 5 stars would be nice. I realise it's a big ask, but if you don't mind. And as well, if you've got a couple of minutes spare, please do leave us a few words as well. It would be absolutely fantastic. I said it would be brief. I think maybe slightly briefer than usual. Let's get back to the episode.
Madeline, can we talk about Canada?
Yeah.
The home of Tim Hortons, hockey.
Oh, speaking my love language. I'm drinking a Tim's Keurig as we speak right now.
I love it. I've said before we started recording, one of my best friends moved to Canada about 15 years ago. And he goes, "You've got to come to Tim Hortons." I was like, "Never heard that before. What's that?" And oh my God, the best donuts. And we now have, there's a couple now in the UK. They've expanded as Tim. Yeah.
Did you go in the UK?
Yeah. Yeah. I drove out to the Tim Hortons. Yeah. Which is about 40 minutes from me, but it arrived. And I thought, well, I've got to go there because it's great. You don't know what Tim Hortons is, do you, Shaz? You've not been to Canada.
I know I like donuts.
Oh, it's coffee like this, and donuts.
Yeah. It's like it's Canada's pride and joy, our coffee chain. I want to know how similar yours is. We're going to have to exchange notes later. I want to know what it's like in the UK. I'm going to have to come and try it for myself, I think.
Absolutely. We'll host you. It'd be great to see you rather than Zoom doing it in person. But you're now also the home of Alcohol-Free Headlines Canada.
Because I've been seeing
it's everywhere.
That.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, before we get into the breaking news from Canada, because I do love a study. God, I love a study.
Really
when the scientists come out and say the things that we've been saying for bloody ages about things like alcohol, I just love it. And it's Health Canada who've been making the news this week. We'll come back to that in a minute. Can you tell us, because obviously, you know, we've actually got 1 in 4 of our podcast listeners are in North America, so you know, USA and Canada.
Yeah.
But that means 3 out of 4 aren't. So can you tell us what the drinking culture is like in Canada?
I mean, it's I guess I would say it's a heavy drinking culture. Like, I lived in Australia for a year and I feel like something we all joked about was like Canadians and Aussies get along well because we like to drink. So it is like I feel like most places you go out for drinks with people, that's what you do to socialize, like the bar scene, you know, like that's all I've known in my adult life was like, that's how you socialize. You go drink, like, you know, university, big party culture there for sure. Like last year I was on the dating apps. Like it's very like being in the dating scene. It's a thing that people are funny about. Like people react weird to people not drinking.
Go on. Just,
some people
just
are great about
us.
It, but lots of people aren't.
What are some of the reactions that you've had? Because you spoke earlier, and I totally agree with this, about feeling really proud of what you're doing because you are swimming against the tide of booze. And when you put your hand up and go, "Hey, I don't drink, I'm sober," you know, people should go, "Bloody good on you." Are you happy to share
they
any
should.
Of the weird reactions that you might have had to your sobriety?
If it's like on a dating app, I mean, I've had some people like say hi and then be like, "All right, let's get right down to it. Like, you don't drink," and like kind of like that. Or I've had a couple people, because like in my photos, I'm like holding a drink in my hand. It's not alcohol, but it's a glass while I'm out. And I've had people be like, "Yeah, I call BS. You don't drink. I see you holding drinks in your photos." Oh, like kind of like that kind of thing. I had someone invite me on a first date to see, like, I guess his friends were like playing, like his friends were in a band, and he's like, "Oh, come watch my friends play." And I went and I didn't realize that like all of his friends were there getting wasted. And someone tried to buy me a shot. And when I said, no, I don't drink, she went, boring.
Brilliant. Aww. You know.
Yeah. I left that date early.
That's just reminded me of a fabulous interaction that I had in Canada to do with shots, where I went to this wedding and I said, you know, and I'm very open about it. And, you know, I didn't talk about it all day, but whenever someone asked, I told them, oh, these are the reasons why I've gone alcohol free.
Yeah.
We're all at the bar at the end of the night. And this girl, she goes, shots, shots, shots for everyone. And she comes across to me and she gives me, I was like, oh, no, no, I don't drink. And she goes, no, it's water, but I just wanted you to feel included.
Oh, that's like, so sweet.
So nice. Yeah, it was lovely. It was really lovely. But I suppose my question for you, Madeline, is this all about to change in Canada? Because Health Canada have come out this week. And they've done a study, Sharon. Yeah. Oh, God, I love a study.
Yes, you've told us, Ben.
Have you seen this, Madeline? I don't know if this is kind of making big international news.
No, I haven't read it in depth, but I've seen the headlines.
Okay, let me give you some of the headlines.
Okay, yeah.
Because I think this is amazing. So, Health Canada have come out and they said that the only way to live a risk-free approach to staying healthy is to remove all alcohol. And they've been very open about that. Who is Health Canada, by the way? Are they like a, it's not like the NHS, is it? Is it kind of a group of scientists?
God. Yeah, I don't know what it would be like comparable to in other countries. It's the official
really clever
Health
people.
Canada. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So Health Canada, they're well known in Canada.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Okay. But they've said that completely cutting out alcohol is the only risk-free approach to staying healthy. They've also massively scaled back the advice. If you are going to have a drink, this is what they've said, drinking 2 alcoholic drinks per week is what they're now deeming as lower risk. But in 2011, the previous study said that it was 10 drinks a week for women and 15 drinks for men.
Oh, wow. But that's a drastic change.
But I think the important bit is they're coming out there and they're saying quite loud and proud, you know, the only way to avoid risk is to not drink.
It's not. It's so important. Like, it's so funny because, like, when it came out way back in the day when everyone smoked cigarettes and when it came out that it wasn't good for you anymore, we seem to, like, accept that as a society. And there's been such a resistance to this information. I feel whenever headlines like this do come out, there's so much resistance to it because people don't want to give up the booze. And like, I get it because I was there once too, but I think it's really important because for me, actually reading up on the science of alcohol really helped me get sober because I didn't know the information. And like, I'm not even a big sciencey kind of person, but when I made the decision, it was something I wanted to do. And I started reading Quitlet and I read This Naked Mind by Annie Grace. And I read William Porter's book, who you mentioned as well. But yeah, no, like reading that stuff, it made something different click for me. And I think the other thing too, it's funny, I was literally just talking to my mom about this yesterday, was that it was almost like I always had this really bad anxiety after drinking, but I don't think I ever stopped to examine it. Like I just kind of accepted it and suffered through it. And then I think to read someone say, alcohol causes anxiety in your brain, it was just this like, oh my God, I'm not crazy. That's not just me. Like that's an actual thing. And now here's the information. And now here's like what I need to do. So I think that like, just at least, you know, if people want to drink, they can drink, but let people be informed about what it does. Not to mention, obviously it's like a leading cause of cancer and health concerns, but I think just people should be informed and then make their decisions.
Funny you say that, because one of the stories that's come out from CBC, is CBC a news channel?
Yeah.
CBC News. They've obviously, somebody there is alcohol free, or at least they're very interested, because they've taken this study and they've released about 4 or 5 different articles and different bits of this study. One of them is alcohol should have cancer warning labels, say doctors and researchers, pushing to raise awareness of risk. Because basically what they're saying is that alcohol is the number one reason for causes of preventable cancer, is how they're phrasing it from this report.
Yeah.
So it's great that they're, you know, I love that it seems to be kind of dominating the news over there at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
To talking about William Porter, I also, it's no secret, I adore that book and I really like William. He was on the pod just a couple of weeks ago, and the DMs and the reactions we've had. It's the third time he's been on, but he just breaks down the science so simply.
Yeah.
And for me, reading about why I felt like this after drinking, why I wasn't able to ever have one or two, because you think, well, what's wrong with me?
Yeah.
It breaks down it's the substance and it's not the person, and you're not a failure and you're not weak and you're not an awful person. It really does break down the science very simplistically, doesn't it, to do with alcohol. And I think once you arm yourself with as much information as possible, you start to really learn what's happening to your mind and body about the booze, and it's a game changer.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it kind of just like, it sort of just validates your experience and you're like, oh my God, this is why this is happening to me, and this makes sense, and like I don't have to stay in this crazy game of trying to moderate an addictive substance.
Like, it's I can a crazy just game.
Yeah.
Okay, Madeline, and I'm not trying to catch you out here at all. Yeah. I'm just interested to see what your response is to this, because talking about warning labels, education, understanding the science, there's some research that was done here recently, another study at the University of Stirling, that basically said that if you put warning labels on alcohol in the same way that we put warning labels on cigarettes here in the UK, that it wouldn't necessarily stop drinkers from drinking, but it would discourage the next generation. Less people would start to drink if they had warning labels on.
Yeah.
But you said to us right at the beginning, your mom's number one rule, she hasn't got any other rules for you and your sisters, it was just don't drink alcohol. You know, and she was very open about her story. You knew the dangers of alcohol, but you still drank. So when you see this research, how does that make you...
That's a really interesting question. And I think the difference is, so for example, I grew up, like I was born in the 90s. I grew up where like health class in school was basically teaching us how bad smoking is for you. Like, I feel like that was like such a big conversation. I've never touched a cigarette in my life because like, I just was like, it's cancerous. I'm not doing it. I've never smoked before. I think the alcohol conversation was a lot more, we have alcoholic genes in our family, we're more likely to have a problem with alcohol, but it wasn't, hey, alcohol is a harmful substance on its own. Like, I think there's still the narrative of like, there are problem drinkers and there are normal drinkers. And like, you might be a problem drinker. So I think once I drank and I experienced, you know, how fun it felt, I wanted to keep going with it. And I would just kind of I was willing to deal with consequences or like be in denial about the fact that I knew I had a problematic relationship with it. But I think if I went into it more like armed with more actual facts about alcohol as a substance, maybe it would have made a difference. I mean, I don't know, but that's how, like, that feels like sort of a difference in my head, is that like there, I think, for so long, there's been this conversation around alcohol where if something's wrong, it's on the person and not the substance. So I think if we flipped that, I feel like that could make a difference.
We could talk another hour about that, couldn't we, Ben? Ben, he just sees, but he's headed his hands. And he's like, no. Man.
Yeah. Well, we always try and make that distinction here.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, a lot of people look back on their days of drinking with feelings of shame and embarrassment. We like to make it very clear, this is a highly addictive substance.
Yeah.
It is accessible. It is everywhere. It is accepted.
It's encouraged.
We like
it's
to
expected
make the
too. Expected. It's not just accepted, it's expected. It's like, this is what you do. Let's get blackout tonight in university. Like, it's so normal. Like, it's not just that drinking is normalized. It's that like problematic drinking is normalized. Like binge drinking is normalized. Like, it's kind of crazy.
I think it's really interesting what you just said there about, you know, this isn't black and white, is it? You know, it's not that, because I think that's also part of this whole kind of drink responsibly narrative, is that some people, you know, society, you're one of the people that can't, but all these other people can, you know, but it's not that, is it? That's not, that shouldn't be the conversation. It's very nuanced. And we talked to Mandy Manners, who's, if you've not spoken to Mandy on your podcast, you would love her. She's amazing.
Okay, noted.
She's just released a book called Love Your Sober Year, and it's fabulous. Like, it kind of takes you through a year, all the different seasons, all the different triggers, and it's great. It's really great. But she was talking about the kind of sliding scale, you know, and it isn't you are a normal drinker or you're a problem drinker. It's not that. If it was taught in that way, if it was taught that this is dangerous and it's not black and white, problem, not problem, you know, this can affect you in so many different ways. And I think, that's a really interesting viewpoint on it.
I think that, like, I totally agree with everything you said. And I feel so strongly about that message, because for me, hearing that for the first time, like hearing for the very first time, like, you don't need to be an alcoholic to quit drinking, that gave me the permission I needed to quit drinking, if that makes sense. Because I think, like, we spend so much time, like, when we are struggling with our drinking, being like, am I an alcoholic? Like, that's the question that everyone asks themselves. Am I an alcoholic? And I always say, like, I think that's the wrong question, because if you're asking the question, there's a reason why you're asking it in the first place. But really, when you're asking the question, am I an alcoholic? The question that's underneath it is, do I have to stop drinking? Because if you say, yes, I'm an alcoholic, okay, I have to stop drinking. No, I'm not an alcoholic. Like, I don't meet whatever, you know, qualifies you as one. Oh, then, like, I don't have to stop drinking, because the only reason to stop is if you're an alcoholic. Like, it's so besides the point. Like, I think that it's like, when I heard that for the first time, it just clicked so hard in my brain. I was like, oh my God, it's irrelevant. It's irrelevant whether I am or not. Like, I can just make this decision because alcohol is negatively affecting my life in this way. And, like, I'll be better off without it, even if that's, you know, a hard decision to make. So I think it's so important to talk about that.
Spot on. You don't need to have a rock bottom to decide to reconsider drinking.
Exactly.
And anybody that makes that decision for whatever reason should be celebrated. Big up your bad selves. That's we're passionate about it, don't we? We really care, Ben, don't we? We really care about
Is that a well-known phrase in Canada? Big up your bad selves, or is that very much a
No, what is
you can
that?
Have that one for free on us.
Okay.
What is that? How would you explain big up your bad selves? Big up your bad selves. In language that translates.
It's like a middle-aged woman's street version of a pat on the back.
Okay.
Well done. It means well done.
It means well done.
Got
it. It's me.
Big up your bad selves.
Embarrassingly trying to be young and trendy and failing. But you know what? I'll never stop. We're out of time. Madeline, it's been a lovely chat. Really, really enjoyed it. One thing I always like to shoehorn in when we've got, in my opinion, I hope you don't mind me saying this, a younger guest on the podcast, because you're 29, I'm 49. To me, you're a lovely young thing. You really are really young. And so's Ben in many ways, but not as young as you. Anyone that's doing this at your age, when you were 26, 27, that's when my drinking ramped up. And so every credit. I think it's a really brave thing to do. I think it's a brilliant thing to do. And I love the fact that you want to now inspire others and show, no matter who it is, that there is another way. So thank you for chatting to us on Over the Influence. Before you go, if anybody wants to follow what you do, find out more about you, listen to your podcast, where can they do that?
Yeah, thank you for saying all that. My Instagram is at Happiest Sober. And then my podcast is Happiest Sober Podcast, which is on all platforms, so they can find it anywhere.
Another fabulous episode, if we do say so ourselves, with another fabulous guest on Over the Influence. Huge thanks to Madeline from Happiest Sober. Do give her a follow on social media, and we're really, really looking forward to catching up with Madeline sometime in the very near future here on Over the Influence. I'm flying solo. I've got no Ben. It's just me saying thank you and goodbye. And before I do, just another quick reminder. If you are one of the many, 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 many people that are currently doing Dry January, if this is you, you're probably slightly just over 3 weeks in. Keep going. If you want any other further support, of course, you can find information from us here at Over the Influence, overtheinfluence.co.uk. But please do take a look at the official Dry January organisation, Alcohol Change. You can also use their Try Dry app. Chances are you've already downloaded it. It is free. There's all sorts of stuff on there. You can track your drinking units, your calories. It's free, it's brilliant, and it's a really, really useful tool. As I said, if you'd like any further information about what we do, you can drop us an email, otihq@overtheinfluence.co.uk, or do take a look at the website, overtheinfluence.co.uk. And don't forget, please do give us a podcast review if you enjoy listening to Over the Influence week in, week out. If you love the guests that we bring you 52 weeks of the year, if you have a laugh as well, even though we tackle some really tough and difficult subjects on the podcast, it's all about normalising sobriety, removing the flipping shame. And let's have a good laugh while we are doing it. If you enjoy what you listen to, please do head to your podcast provider and give us a glowing review. It will be much appreciated. Thank you for listening. Same time next week.